This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com. La ilaha illallah.
Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I'd like to welcome you, dear viewers, to another in our series, The Best of Tawheed, in which we're looking at the best evidences which have been used from the Quran and the Sunnah to establish the correct meaning for this central pillar of Islam, Tawheed, the unique unity of Allah and its maintenance. How do we maintain it as a unique unity in our thought, our actions, our deeds? Scholars have dissected it in order to facilitate its understanding. And we have been looking at various elements from it and various concepts, statements, arguments, which in fact contradict the true teachings and violate its principles. In our previous episode, we were looking at fortune telling. And then we looked at a branch of fortune telling called astrology, which is very popular, probably the most widespread practice of fortune telling today. The other area, which is also a forbidden area, which violates the key principles of Tawheed, is the area known as magic. In Arabic, it's called sihr. If we look at the practice of magic, for which other terms like witchcraft, divination, necromancy, amongst the more classical terms used for it, sorcery, although witchcraft tended to be practiced by women, they call that witchcraft, the witch being a female magician. So these various practices, whatever name we give them, from the Islamic perspective, they are, as a whole, a forbidden area because the Prophet, may God's peace and blessing be upon him, had prohibited magic based on the Quranic injunctions against it. We have clear statements from the Quran with regards to Prophet Sulaiman, where magic had been attributed to Prophet Sulaiman by the Jews. The Jews claimed that he had a special book of magic from which he practiced this particular form of evil. And so the things that he was able to do, which were in fact miracles, speaking with the animals, the birds, the ants, etc., and having control over the jinn and the various land and air animals, they followed his command, they did whatever he told them to do. They looked at all of this as magic, rather than looking at it as miracles from Allah given to Prophet Sulaiman. They looked at it as magic. And that is why they attributed magic to him. However, if we look at the text of the Quran in Surah Al-Baqarah, verse 102, where Allah said, they follow what the devils related concerning Solomon's kingdom. But it was not Solomon who disbelieved. It was the devils who disbelieved by teaching the people magic. And that which was revealed to the angels Harut and Marut in Babylon. Although the two would not teach anyone anything until after they warned them, saying, Indeed, we are only a test and a trial, so do not commit disbelief. So, this is a portion of the verse which clearly absolves Prophet Suleiman from any attribution of magic to him. This was not what he taught, that which he had learned. You know, it was something evil which was coming from the devils, the shayateen. They're the ones who were practicing it. And they had learned it from two angels, Harut and Marut, who had been sent to Babylon as a trial and a test for the people of Babylon. And those angels would never teach any of magic to the people, to human beings, without first warning them that it's disbelief. However, the people were keen on learning this practice and the knowledge of it, and by doing so, they committed disbelief. This is the clear text from the Quran. However, the Jews, modifying the text, developed their own mystical system called the Kabbalah. And in it, magic is practiced, and the knowledge of it, they related to Prophet Solomon. However, this verse in the Quran has clearly indicated that this is false. It's not true at all. Instead, it is something evil which had already been forbidden in Deuteronomy 18 verses 9 to 12, where we find what is attributed to God in the Torah, saying to Jews who were led by their Muslim leaders, because actually they were not really Jews, they were Muslims. When you come into a land which the Lord your God gives you, you shall not learn to follow the abominable practices of those nations. There shall not be found among you anyone who burns his son or daughter as an offering, anyone who practices divination, a soothsayer or an augur, that's fortune telling, or a sorcerer, or a charmer, or a medium, or a wizard, or a necromancer. For whoever does these things is an abomination to the Lord. And because of these abominable practices, the Lord your God is driving them out before you. So there's a clear indication here that from the Jewish Christian scriptures, the practice of magic was an abomination. It was something greatly forbidden by the revelation of the past, as well as in the final revelation itself. And in the same verse we looked at, where Allah clears Prophet Suleiman of any association of magic to him, Allah says there, whoever purchases it would have no share of paradise in the hereafter, indicating that the person will end up in hell. One who is engaged in it would in fact end up in hell. The question concerning magic, where it has become so popular today as a form of entertainment, and we know a good portion of that magic is just trickery. It's just a form of delusion or illusion. They give you an impression of one thing when things are, in fact, another way. That's not the way they actually are. So is this then forbidden? Is this a part of the forbidden magic? Or is there white and black magic? You know, people talk about black magic, and then there's white magic. So black magic is like the bad magic, and white magic is like the good magic. Well, the reality is, from the Islamic perspective, is all magic. It's all forbidden. Even what is trickery is forbidden to be practiced in such a way that people believe that the one doing it is actually doing what he is appearing to do. If one was just entertaining people by doing a trick and then explaining to them how he did it, so it's clear to the people this is not magic, it's just an illusion. that's a different situation. But where one comes out and you go through all the motions and, you know, you have your assistants and you do things, sawing people in half and, you know, all these other kinds of things, and the people are just amazed. How? How did they do it? You know, how is it possible? And they think that this person is actually able to do these things. This is forbidden. From an Islamic perspective, this is not allowable. Even though it's not real, quote-unquote, magic, but it is enough down the way to be considered haram and forbidden, not allowed in Islam. We're going to take a brief break, after which we will continue to look at magic as a practice, as it is practiced today, and try to get to the root elements of why it is forbidden. We'll see you after the break. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome back from the break. Now, prior to the break, we were looking at magic as an illusion, tricks that are done to entertain people, while people actually end up believing that what is being done is actually being done and that it's not an illusion. But even if they know it's an illusion, we said that this is not permissible as it is opening the door for the forbidden forms. So magic has two aspects to it, one which may be called tricks, magical tricks. The other, which involves now contact with the jinn, the world of the jinn. This type of magic, which can now affect people by spells actually causing physical harm and damage, this type, which is the core, is clearly forbidden. The Prophet, may God's peace and blessing be upon him, forbade it in no uncertain terms. And we mentioned the verses in the Quran in which Allah attributes to those who practice it disbelief. So this form of magic involves support and help of the jinn, where the jinn, who are normally invisible to the rest of us, can support the magician, the real magician, in some of his acts and practices to give the people the impression that he has supernatural powers, powers which really only belong to God alone. So people's faith in God is shaken, and this opens them up now to other satanic forces which would encourage them to engage in forbidden acts of sacrifice and worship to other than Allah, and all of this can come in along with that package. But this is why Islam forbids it outright. Don't even do it in fun, presenting a magic show. One thing to entertain, as we said, and explain what you're doing so people understand that it is just, you know, a quick trick that you have done, something which will cause them to laugh, whatever, etc. But in the end, they know it isn't real. That's a different status. But for most magicians, they have oaths that they swear to, that they would not reveal the tricks of the trade to others, etc. You know, it's a closed circle of the major magicians, beginning with people like Houdini and others before him, you know, who have developed this means, ways and means of tricking people into believing that human beings are able to do some of these supernatural acts. But the fact of the matter is that they really aren't. It's only what your eyes see. As they say, the hand is faster than the eye. When the hand moves faster than the eye is able to follow, or the hand is able to do things out of contact of the eye, so the eye is not able to follow it, so a person may take from your ear a coin. You wonder, where did that come from? Obviously, there was no coin behind your ear, you know that. All of a sudden, he's got a hand, there's no coin there, and all of a sudden, he's taking a coin from your ear. Well, of course, He has taken the coin from other sources, switched it from hand to hand, or picked it up from some pocket on his body, on his person, you know, and has kept it hidden in his hand in such a way that it appears now that he's putting an empty hand forward and then pulling a coin from behind your ear. So these are just tricks, but for those ignorant people who don't understand the prohibition of magic, they may look at this as something very light and not very significant. But the reality is it's a path, you know. It's a road that you go down. And this is just one of the stages of the road. So when we look at the time of the Prophet Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam himself, in fact, a magician, sorcerer, who was in Medina from one of the Jewish tribes, had cast a spell on the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. We can find the story of it narrated in Sahih al-Bukhari as well as Sahih Muslim. It states there in one of the narrations, Zayd ibn Arqam reported that a Jew by the name of Labid ibn A'sam cast a magical spell on the Prophet. And when he began to suffer from it, Jibreel came to him and revealed the Mu'awwadhatan, the two surahs, Al-Falaq and Nas, which are used to seek refuge in Allah from harm at the end of the Quran. Then said to him, surely it was a Jew who cast this spell on you, and the magical charm is in a certain well. The Prophet ﷺ told him to untie the knots in it, one by one, and recite a surah from the surahs with each. When he did so, the Prophet ﷺ got up as if he had been released from being tied up. Okay, so the Prophet ﷺ was affected by this magical charm which Labid ibn A'sam had prepared for him and buried it in a well in Medina. Now, what he had done was collected a comb of the Prophet, which had some of his hairs from his head, etc. And he had tied knots into it, to this concoction, blown over it, and with the aid of the jinn, it affected the Prophet Muhammad ﷺ in such a way that some things you remember that he had done. But in fact, what he thought he hadn't done, he did do. And what he thought he did do, he hadn't done. So, you know, there was this kind of effect on him, where he was unsure about things. Some things, he thought he did them, but in fact his wives would tell him, no, you didn't do that. Or he thought he did it, and he said, no, you haven't done that. You know, sort of thing. So then Allah sent the last two chapters of the Quran, قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ الْفَلَقِ and قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ النَّاسِ, as a means of breaking the spell. So we take from that if anybody is suffering in such a way, then it is about reciting these chapters. This chapter should be recited for that person as a means of removing the spiritual ailment which has come over them as a result of magic. So when the Prophet ﷺ had this done, obviously it's not surprising then for him to speak of magic in such a harsh manner. Well, not himself directly, but his companions after him did engage in executing anyone who was caught in the practice of magic. One of the things that we also have to consider because of the use of the jinn or the involvement of the jinn in terms of affecting people through magic, because you have to remember that because the jinn are invisible to us, if a person was working with a jinn, for example, then the jinn could lift him from his chair and he would appear to those people to have just raised himself. He could say to them, look, I will show you a sign. And then as he's sitting there, his body raises from the chair. And they don't see any wires or anything which raises him up enough that you could look under. And you don't see any, you know, structure which has raised him up. So, wow. But of course, when you understand that that person is working with the jinn are invisible to us, then they can simply lift him up and we wouldn't know it. So, these types of practice, which may start off very simple, may then shift to this stage where you're actually harming people through the jinn and magic. In fact, the practice of magic is quite widespread in many Muslim countries today, third world Muslim countries, where, you know, people talk about being affected by magic all the time. You know, in fact, maybe they have gone overboard to a certain degree that anything that happens, they say, oh, it must be magic. So-and-so can't get married. Very common point that I hear in Facebook questions sent to me, you know, what can I do? You know, I think there's magic on me. Every time I try to get married, the things don't work out. It's been years now and I haven't got married yet. Magic. You know, somebody, I can't have a baby. I've been trying to have a baby, so-and-so-and-so. I think somebody's put a spell on me, my mother-in-law or whatever. You know, magic. So many things tend to be attributed to magic. Of course, much of it is not at all. But there are some genuine cases where people are engaged in magic and using the jinn to harm others. So it's not something we can treat lightly and just laugh it off when people are genuinely being hurt in different parts of the world. So the issue of magic, we've seen what the Prophet Muhammad has done. He has advised to be done the recitation of the last two chapters of the Quran in order to break the spell and to clear the person from its effects. That we can do likewise, where somebody who comes to us, who informs us, you know, that they're suffering in this way or the other way, without going into great details as to how, when, where, why, we can simply recite over them these last two chapters, recite it, you know, continually, and Allah willing, the state that they're in will be corrected or alleviated. So we should, on one hand, avoid magic and its practice as much as possible. And on the other hand, we should be conscious of its impacts, its effects, and how we can deal with it if we find it present. So with that, dear viewers, I'd like to thank you for being with us in this segment of our program, The Best of Tawheed. We'll be looking a bit further into the impact or the role of jinns in terms of affecting us as human beings, whether through magical practices of other human beings or through other practices. You know, realities are that there are many of us who do suffer from this interaction, this, you could say, demonic attack. And as a result, it has devastated people's lives. So we will be looking at that in more detail to get to the root of it and understand the problems and the issues. So we hope to see you in the coming episode. I now bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Oh Lord, here I am, please.
Islamic Online University provides you with the golden opportunity to study the various branches of Islamic studies from the comforts of your home. Now, you get to study at your own time schedule and at a pace that suits you best. IOU is the brainchild of Dr. Bilal Phillips, who envisioned an institution that would offer undergraduate and postgraduate courses online and completely tuition-free.
Choose from the widest range of programs that you can ever imagine. Bachelor's in Islamic Studies, Intensive Arabic Program, Global Quran Memorization Program, Bridge to Master's in Islamic Studies, Bachelor's, Certificate, and Diploma in Psychology, Education, Islamic Finance, Business Administration, and Information Technology. And the Crown, Master's in Islamic Studies.
Our syllabus is based on the Bachelor's Degree Program of Madina University, Om Durman Islamic University, Al-Azhar University, and other reputable Islamic institutions. Your journey to acquire Islamic knowledge is just a click away. Islamic Online University. changing the nation through education. Register now and get started. Visit www.iou.edu.gm for more details.